Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Today we're back with another of the season preview podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by Basketball Monster and by Hardwell Paroxysm. And to help me do the season preview podcast for today's team, which is the Los Angeles Clippers, I am joined by Daniel Lewis of Hardwell Paroxysm. Daniel, how are you going?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Now, before we get everything started, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
You can find me at MinutemanDan on Twitter. Also, like you said, I write for Hardwood Paroxysm as well.
So go ahead and follow Daniel over on Twitter, MinutemanDan. You'll see that link out on the tweets when I send out for this show, and you'll see that all over the place. So make sure you go ahead and follow Daniel and check out the articles he's been writing over at Hardwood Paroxysm. Now, Daniel, we're talking Los Angeles Clippers today, a team who had a very interesting offseason, to say the least. There was peaks and troughs and valleys and all that sort of stuff. But in the end, they came out looking pretty good. Do you see the team now as stronger than what they were when they ended last season?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're definitely a team on the rise. They return a lot of their starting roster, except for Matt Barnes. But they add Paul Pierce, a little bit more of a veteran presence to that team. But the real contribution, I think, to their team that helps them become a team on the rise is the value that they added to their bench in forms of Josh Smith, Lance Stephenson, even a guy like Wesley Johnson, who may not see a lot of minutes every game, but could have an impact as well on the team and from an athletic standpoint as well.
Yeah, let's talk about all the guys that they did add this season, because we heard last season that they were very solid. They had a very good starting five, a really strong starting five, but their bench was just horrific. When their best player came off the bench was Austin Rivers, they were in a lot of trouble. They were running out guys like Hedo Turkoglu, Big Baby Davis as some of their better players, and that's just not going to get it done. But they bring in a whole stack of guys this year. So Paul Pierce comes in, and ostensibly he's going to be replacing Matt Barnes as the starting small forward. He probably won't play quite as many minutes as Barnes, would you think? Or do you think he's going to get an increase on what he saw in Washington? Or are we looking low 20s for Pierce, more likely?
I think it's realistic to expect that he'll be getting low 20 minutes. I mean, how old is he now? 36, 37 years old?
I think he's 37, yeah.
37. I mean, he's got a lot of seasons on his knees, on his back, and it wouldn't make sense to play him a lot of minutes. You know, you'd want to play him at spells, with start the game with the starting unit throughout, you know, the second and third quarter, and then make sure you have him fresh for the fourth quarter when you really need his floor spacing, playmaking, and rebounding on the floor. I would also not be surprised if Doc Rivers rested him on a back-to-back on the second night, or depending on how their schedule goes, one of those two nights, and even giving a guy like Wesley Johnson some more minutes, someone who's a young player, you know, especially on the roster, on the Clippers roster this year, and letting Pierce just rest, because they'll really need him in the playoffs, you know, not as much during the regular season.
Yeah, we saw what he did in the playoffs last season for Washington. He wound the clock back, it felt like, 2 or 3 years, playing a different role that suited him a lot. He was invisible for lots of periods of the regular season last season, but he's, as you said, stepped it up when it mattered. And I think that's exactly what Doc Rivers is going to want him to do. They're obviously intimate with each other from their time back in Boston. He'll know how to use Pierce. Pierce knows how to use himself as well. He knows how to manage himself. And I think that it's going to be fantastic for the Clippers. But for fantasy, I don't think there's going to be a huge amount of impact. Pierce, I've got currently ranked outside the top 150. So I don't think you really need to consider him in any 10 or 12 team leagues. There'll be situations where you can add him in on nights where the Clippers play and not many other teams play, and you're just looking for someone who might go out and get you 10 points and a 3 and 4 or 5 rebounds. But overall, his value is not going to be fantastic. He's currently being drafted at pick 137, which is too high for my liking. I just don't see him being someone who's going to contribute enough on a regular basis. And as you said, there's the risk of him sitting out back-to-back games, plus the minutes are going to be limited. So great addition for them, but it's not going to impact your fantasy league. The other guys they added.
If you're playing daily fantasy, Paul Pierce might be a great add on nationally broadcast games.
Yeah,
against the big opponent.
That's true. I reckon he'll be a cheap price as well.
In a redraft or a dynasty league, he's almost irrelevant.
In a dynasty league, how many years did the Clippers give him? Was it they gave him a 2 or 3 year deal?
I think it's 3 years.
Yeah. But his role's going to go down and down. No.
Yeah.
We have to be talking 250 people deep, or even 200 people deep, for him to have somewhat of an impact. He's not going to be completely irrelevant. Look, to frame it in terms of this Clippers team from last season, he's going to be better value than what Hedo Turkoglu was. He's going to be better value than Big Baby Davis. He's going to be better value than guys like Reggie Bullock and CJ Wilcox, who were playing that position last season. But he's probably not going to be as relevant as what Matt Barnes was last year. And Barnes was a borderline top 150 sort of guy. The other guys they brought in, let's run through the names. Josh Smith, Chuck Hayes has come in, Wes Johnson, Cole Aldrich, Lance Stephenson, Pablo Prigioni. The best signing of those, in my mind, well, Josh Smith at the minimum is great value, but I really like what they've done by bringing in Cole Aldrich. I thought that he was a guy that should have demanded more attention on the open market. He could have been in a situation where he could have got a bigger role. I think the way things have worked out in Dallas, I think he would have been a great addition to go down in Dallas and get 25 minutes. I really like what he was able to do in New York. I think he provides tremendous value, considering, again, they had no one backing up DeAndre Jordan last season. Now, Jordan never misses a game, but we used to say the same thing about Russell Westbrook. So an injury to DeAndre Jordan, at least they have a capable backup there. What are your thoughts on Aldridge overall? Do you like the pickup? Who's the best pickup out of all these guys they've added onto their bench, do you think?
I think Aldridge does have some value if you want to take a flyer on a big man that can get you some points and rebounds and some blocks. If DeAndre Jordan is going to miss time for an injury. Like you said, though, you know, I think DeAndre Jordan has the streak for most consecutive games played in the NBA. He's one of the safest picks you can get in terms of not missing games and playing 35 minutes a night. I think that Josh Smith could have some fantasy value. Again, you're going to have to, you know what you're getting with Josh Smith, though. You know, the percentages probably aren't going to be very good. But if he has the opportunity to play some extended minutes, either as a small ball four along Jordan or Blake Griffin, or even in a bigger lineup at the three with alongside Griffin and Jordan, I think he may have some value there. But again, you're going to have to sacrifice your percentages as well there.
The other thing with Smith is that, again, he's going to be overvalued because of his name value. He's currently being drafted at pick 130, and that, to me, I just don't see where he's going to get...
That's too high.
I don't see where he's getting the minutes. I think he's going to, at the moment, in terms of my projections, I've got him under 20 minutes a game. I just don't see where he's going to get the minutes. If you're going to give him over 20 minutes a game, you're going to have to put Paul Pierce under 20. You're going to have to drop JJ Redick down below 29 minutes a game. Jamal Crawford's going to have to get less than 20 minutes a game. And all these things are pretty much unlikely to happen. And I think Josh Smith in an 18 to 20 minute a game role suits what the Clippers want, but that's not enough for him to accumulate big numbers from fantasy. It helps that his percentages won't impact you as much. And he's going to be a great option to stream in at times if Griffin happens to go down, or if they decide to run him at the three, which I think would be a mistake because he's pretty much a horrible guy to play at the three, just because of he's a four these days. Look, he was a three at some stage in Atlanta, but we saw him trying to play the three in Detroit, and it was just horrific. I think that he has to play behind Griffin, so he's basically going to be Blake Griffin's primary backup for most of the time. He will play. There could be a little bit of time that he plays at the three. But it's not going to be a big amount. So, yeah, we love what Josh Smith can do from a fantasy point of view if you ignore his percentages. But his role is going to be even less than what we saw last season in Houston to really have any sort of impact. Wes Johnson's a guy that I like as well. You mentioned him a bit. I think he brings a lot to this team. They don't have many guys. There's not many guys like Wes Johnson in the league. As much as he's been a bust as a fourth overall pick in the NBA, his ability to go out there, and he did it for the Lakers 2 seasons ago, hit a three, get a block, and get a steal a game. And over the last 4 seasons, there's been 4 guys that have done that. He's one of them. Paul Millsap's one of them. Draymond Green's one of them. And Danny Green is the other one. So not many guys have that sort of unique skill set. So in a situation where he was pressed into action, whether that's through Paul Pierce suffering an injury, which is not an out-of-this-world sort of situation given his age, Wes Johnson could slide in, and I think that Wes Johnson would be the choice to play the three over Josh Smith if something did happen to Paul Pierce. You've mentioned Johnson a couple of times. Do you like Johnson as a fit with this team?
I really do. If you were able to watch some of the Lakers games last season, and they were on national TV quite a bit, you'd saw Wes Johnson, you know, shooting threes well from the corners, just being a defensive menace, really, using his athleticism and his length to contest guys and poke balls away and score in transition. Like you said, if he gets that chance, you know, those nights where Paul Pierce isn't getting a lot of minutes, you know, he could be great for a daily fantasy option. In a regular fantasy league, you know, you're just going to have to take those nights where he doesn't get a lot of minutes and, you know, take the loss from the decreased production. But those nights where he does get 25 minutes a night, I think he'll be able to get you those defensive stats that you might be looking for, plus the three-pointers.
No, it's not going to happen very often. And all these guys, we're talking about deeper leagues and guys to keep an eye on if something happens to Griffin or something happens to Pierce. But they do have a plethora of talent there with Smith and Johnson. We haven't even mentioned Lance Stephenson. That's because I just don't think that Lance Stephenson's all that good. Now, we mentioned that Josh Smith was at too high at pick 130. Paul Pierce is too high at pick 137. Lance Stephenson's going at pick 140. And even that, to me, that's the last round of a draft. It's too high. He's not going to have an impact this season. I can't see him being a guy that jumps back into fantasy consideration. I can't see a situation where he even approaches 20 minutes a game. I've got him currently ranked outside my top 300. Which Stevenson's the real Stevenson? The one we saw for basically all of his career, except for that 1 year in Indiana, or that 1 year in Indiana? Which one is the real one?
I think it probably trends towards the one, the Lance Stevenson that you saw all the other seasons in Indiana. It's hard for me to project and really see what kind of a role he has with the Clippers, especially with the personnel they have, because he needs to have the ball in his hand if he's going to be successful, you know, creating, going towards the rim. But that's, right now, that's a role that Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford are both better than him at.
Yep. And Pablo Prigioni.
You know, Pablo might be more of a spot up guy, but he can bring the ball up the court and initiate the offense. But that secondary bench unit for the Clippers, the offense is initiated through Jamal Crawford.
Yep.
You know, he's going to get the ball. He's going to dribble for a couple seconds. They're going to run some picks up for him. He's going to create off the dribble and, you know, take shot opportunities. I don't know how, you know, Stevenson's on a good perimeter shooter.
He's not a good one. He's a horrific perimeter shooter.
He's a terrible perimeter shooter. So if Crawford is moved for a trade for someone, either another backup big or, you know, point guard depth, you know, he could have a role, but it's going to be limited minutes. And I could see Doc Rivers really having a quick trigger and saying, you know, hey, Lance is tearing the flow of the game apart. You know, he's ripping apart the flow of the offense, the game, and, you know, we got to get him out of here if we want to keep a lead. So I don't see him having a very big role. The Clippers are banking on him being able to turn it out, put it together, and have a good season, but, you know, that doesn't mean that fantasy owners should invest in him as well.
I've heard of people saying, oh, I'm just going to take a flyer on him in the last round. Well, you know what? You want to take a flyer on someone in the last round where you've got, there's a good chance of them of providing big upside. But to me, this is zero chance. And you know what? Even when Stevenson had that big year in Indiana, his impact was overrated. He scored okay, but he didn't score 20 points a game. He wasn't at 18 points a game. He didn't score big numbers. He got nice assist numbers. He got nice rebound numbers. He gets no steals, no blocks. He shoots horrific percentages, and he turned the ball over a ton for a guy as a shooting guard and hit no threes. So basically, he was a guy who contributed in like 1.5 categories. And you always heard Lance Stephenson led the league in triple doubles. That's great. That's fine. But a triple double means that you only have to get 10 points, which is basically what he was doing a lot of the time anyway. He wasn't scoring big points, and he just wasn't helping in any other categories. And that just is over inflated his perception and his value in that season, especially in fantasy circles. So my one piece of advice for this season is just avoid Lance Stephenson. Don't think that it's going to pan out, because even if it does, he's not going to become fantastic. He might become a top 130 guy, but again, it's going to depend on a trade of Jamal Crawford or an injury to someone ahead of him. There's just too many situations that have to go right in this case for him to get anything happening at all.
Yeah, take Evan Fournier or someone else instead of him. Don't take Lance Stephenson.
Evan Fournier is that much better than what Lance Stephenson can be, or what Lance Stephenson is. It's not even close to me, but I am probably Evan Fournier's biggest fan. But still, interesting that you picked him as a comparison, because he is just miles and miles ahead of Stephenson. I cannot deal with Stephenson at all. He just does not get me excited one little bit. What about the guys that they lost? Spencer Hawes was terrible after coming off a really good season in Cleveland and Philadelphia. He was disgusting for the Clippers, and a lot of that was playing out of position for times, but it just didn't suit what he did. He heads off to Charlotte now. Matt Barnes is been on a couple of teams already this summer. He's now in Memphis. I think the loss of Barnes is much bigger than the loss of Hawes. Barnes was an underrated player for the Clippers. They are going to miss what he did. He was able to get hot for long stretches of times in terms of hitting the three. He provided good defense numbers. He was an aggressive rebounder. He was obviously just an aggressive player in general. I think they're going to miss what Barnes did, but I would say that the addition of guys like Smith, Johnson, Will and Pierce offset that a bit. But I think that Barnes is probably an underrated loss for them. Do you agree with that, or do you think that they're much better off without him?
I mean, he's a big loss. He was really close with a lot of the players off the court, and he helped improve the team chemistry. And he was one of those glue guys that helped the team come together. And, you know, his stats may not have been as reflective as the rest of the team, but, you know, he was able to make a contribution with the team in other ways. So there is that potential of having a big loss, especially just from a team chemistry standpoint. However, I think that adding a veteran like Paul Pierce really helps fill that void. You know, they are different. They have different personalities, but I think that Paul Pierce can bring that veteran presence that some of the Clippers' younger players like Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, really, really value and really thrive with. And I think that, you know, Paul Pierce can help bring that edge, you know, and that he can get hot for a streak. He can get, you know, get to the free throw line, make a defensive stop or take a charge. Things that Matt Barnes was doing for the Clippers, but now they're getting someone that's a Hall of Fame player.
It's a, yeah, it's definitely different games, but I do think that they will miss Barnes, but they will be able to make up for it with those guys that they brought in. Guys that, you know, Wes Johnson can provide the defense, Pierce can hit the threes, Josh Smith provides some rebounding and on-ball defense and shot blocking and just a whole range of stuff. So I think they're going to be okay, but Barnes is more of a loss than what some people maybe thinking that he is, because he was a key part of this team and did have stretches where he was very, very impressive. He'd also go missing for big stretches, but he had big times when he would go really, really big and hit a lot of threes and do a whole heap of stuff. Now, the next section, Daniel, we have a look at, and we talk about dynasty leagues, and we look at the players that have been drafted from the last two drafts. Did the Philadelphia podcast a couple of days ago, and I reckon we talked about 10 different guys. For the Clippers, the list is pretty short, and it is far from awe-inspiring. CJ Wilcox is the only guy that is on this roster that has been drafted in the last couple of seasons, and it's fair to say that he hasn't really covered himself in glory in the time that he's been in Los Angeles. Give us your take on Wilcox. Is it just that he's stuck on a stacked team and he's not getting the minutes? And if he went to a bad team, so if he played in a Philadelphia, if he played in Sacramento, we'd see a lot more for him? Or is he just not showing anything?
He was a great shooter in college. So, you know, he can light it up from outside. But on the Clippers, you know, he's the sixth guard. You know, they're going to be playing. Paolo Prigioni might get more minutes than he does.
Yep.
So, you know, he, for a dynasty purpose, I mean, the only way that he'd ever show up on the radar is if he got traded to a team that just desperately needed two guard help. And, but, you know, with him on the Clippers, that's not going to happen. Things would have to be going really, really bad for the Clippers for C.J. Wilcox to be getting 20 minutes a game.
There's no point even investing in him in a dynasty league, really, because he hasn't shown that he's going to be able to do anything, even if he got the minutes. He hasn't shot the ball well, really, in any sort of stretches. I'd say the best game he's had, he would have struggled to even reach double digits. I haven't looked that up, but I would be doubtful that he's how many times would you say he's reached double digit scoring in his career?
Four times.
I reckon that's high. I don't know the number, but I'll just have a look at last year's figures. Once he did it last season. All right, that was quick to count. Let's see what that was. That's it. Once he hit double digits.
He's not getting minutes.
He had 10 points in 9 minutes on the 8th of February, and he also contributed one assist in that game, and that's all. I guess the best thing I can say for C.J. Wilcox is that they traded with Reggie Bullock ahead of him, and they had both those guys as late first round shooting guards, and they got rid of Bullock to keep Wilcox. That could be because the Suns wanted Bullock more, but who knows? I don't think there's any point in investing in C.J. Wilcox in a dynasty league. He's shown us nothing, but he's only 1 year in, so things could change. He could get better, but they brought in more guys ahead of him, and he's just not going to see any sort of role. He'd have to put up some crazy sort of D-League stats to really show something. But as for now, we can just forget about C.J. Wilcox. Who's a player, Daniel, that we look at as a breakout candidate, where we go, a player who was good, and then they become a great player, or a player who was irrelevant, and then turns himself into a serviceable type of role player? Do you have a player that sort of fits that category for this team?
For the Clippers, I mean, because so many of the guys that they added are veteran players who have had established roles in the league, I really don't think there is a breakout candidate for this team. You know what you're getting from Chris Paul. You know what you're getting from J.J. Redick. You know, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan are known assets. Paul Pierce, it's easy to project what he's going to provide. And then the bench players, similar roles, you know, with limited minutes or just similar roles, like Wesley Johnson is going to be transferring from a similar role with the Lakers to the Clippers, although the talent around him is going to be better. I really don't see a breakout candidate. You know what you're going to be getting, and you're going to have to pay the price for that in the draft.
That's pretty accurate. All their starters are established guys. The one guy that I would say that started to show a little bit towards the end of last season and could solidify himself into a decent backup role is Austin Rivers. He has been the butt of everyone's joke for about the last three seasons. But towards the end of last season, when he was getting more run and he was playing bigger roles, he actually looked not terrible. And especially in the playoffs, he'd get some time when Chris Paul was out, and he'd start, and he was not terrible. And that's, you know, the jump from going from terrible to not terrible can be significant for some players. And I think he made that jump. And I think that now we talk about, I know there's, you know, calls of nepotism and him getting this contract from the Clippers, but he's going to be there. They're going to be relying on him as their backup point guard along with Jamal Crawford. But if Crawford goes, he's going to be handling the ball a lot more. And I think that he can develop himself into a serviceable role player, a guy who gets only 18 minutes a night, and he's only going to be useful in deeper leagues. But he'll be a player that if Chris Paul goes down, and last season aside, Chris Paul has always missed time. Now, he played 82 games last year, but before that, he'd only played 80 games once throughout his career. So the odds are that Chris Paul is going to miss time, whether that's 2 games, whether it's 5 games, or whether it's a 15-game stretch that he has. He's going to miss some time, you'd think. If he plays 82 games 2 years in a row, I'm going to be extremely surprised. So we're going to see a stage where Austin Rivers is a starter, and we're going to see a time where Austin Rivers plays 25 to 30 minutes a night. And in that time, he's going to be fantasy relevant. So don't discount Austin Rivers, because I think he did make significant strides towards the end of last season. You probably saw a little bit more of Rivers than what I did. Am I off the mark by saying that he improved to become not terrible?
No, I think that's pretty accurate to say that he was not terrible. I mean, I think in a comparable situation, if you're going to take a chance on DJ Augustine and get production from him off Thunder's bench, then you might as well, you know, get similar value out from Austin Rivers, you know, points, a couple of assists, you know, a steal here and there. And Austin Rivers is going to get to the free throw line. He showed that he was going to be able to get to the rim, you know, although it was a little bit of a herky jerky motion to get there. he was able to have a little bit of production. And, you know, like you said, you know, Chris Paul's health isn't the safest bet every year. And, you know, Rivers might be able to start 10, 15, 20 games this season.
Yep. Absolutely. He could start, and he is going to start those games. If Paul goes down, they're not going to start Jamal Crawford, even though Crawford will probably play bigger minutes if he's still around. But Rivers will be the guy that starts, and he will get more minutes, and he will become a guy for daily fantasy in those first couple of games when Paul is out. If you'll put Rivers in, he'll be at like a $3,000, $4,000 salary. You'll be able to put him in, and you'll get significant value from him in that situation until they realize and start bumping his salary up. But he's the butt of a lot of people's jokes, but it's warranted in some degree, but it's less warranted now than what it was. And that can make a big difference. So just keep his name in mind when you're thinking about guys. And if you're in a deeper league as well, he's going to be someone who's going to have a pretty solid, you know, 20 minute role. It's going to be bigger than the role he had in New Orleans, and you know, more on par with what we saw towards the end of last season and in the playoffs. So Austin Rivers is my guy who I think can develop into something, which is better than nothing. Now let's talk sleeper players, Daniel. We want to talk players who, you know, when we look at what their current average draft position is, guys who we think that might be getting undervalued by the public. Now the Clippers are a big market team. They haven't historically been a huge team, but they're a team with lots of recognizable players on them. So in general, when you're talking a team with lots of recognizable players, big market teams, big name players, not many of them get underrated. Is there anyone on this team that you think, yeah, this guy is getting underrated, or do you think that there's no one that fits the bill here?
The guy that I thought of when you asked me that question was JJ Redick, but I think that he is a little, like, his average shot position is going to be a little bit higher than where he should be appropriately rated. I mean, last season he had, 16 points a game, 2.5 threes, and he shot 44% from the field. Those are really good numbers for a fantasy shooting guard. But is he worth an 8th round pick? I don't think so. A 10th round pick? That's probably more appropriate. I think that JJ Redick is someone that could have, you know, a little bit more sleeper potential just because if, you know, he's going to have games where he puts in 3 or 4 3-pointers and he gets hot for a week. If you remember last season when Blake Griffin was out.
Oh, he was crazy.
Redick was crazy good. He was scoring 20 points a game, getting a couple assists. So he's shown that he has been able to elevate his play if the Clippers need it. And I think Doc Rivers knows now that if he needs to call on someone to get him some offense and some of his stars are having an off night, that he can turn to JJ Redick and get shooting from the perimeter as well as, great percentages from the mid-range.
The last month of last season, so the last 15 games of the season, he averaged 21 points a game, he hit over 3 threes a game, 2 assists, shot 53% from the field, 95% from the line, and 49% from three. Now, those numbers aren't sustainable, but it shows you what he can do when he's pressed into extended action. He averaged 31 minutes for the season. He was at 32 for that month, so just a little bit of extra action, but it was more responsibility on his shoulders, and he responded fantastically. He's currently being drafted at, I think it's 81, his position, which to me is still a little bit high, but you could see him pushing into the top 70. I just think that this at 81, the ceiling might not quite be there. But look, those numbers he put up at the second half of last season, they were top 50 worthy. And once you see that somebody's got that potential and has done it for a couple of months like he did, that means that's where their ceiling is. And that, you know, anything can happen. Guys can go down. And there are guys that even if they get extended run, can't do anything, can't improve what they do, can't give us big numbers. But Redick in this situation, when he was given the opportunity, when they lost the scoring option in Griffin, he cranked it up, and he was putting in top 50 numbers for a good couple of months. And that's something to bear in mind, that all you need is one little thing to break your way, not if you're a Clippers fan, obviously, but Redick then could become a much more valuable player. The player I wanted to touch on as a sleeper guy is going to sound a bit stupid saying it, but DeAndre Jordan has currently got an average draft position of 24, which for some people might seem crazy high. But for me, if you're in a head-to-head league, DeAndre Jordan's talent is top 10, because you know that let's just get this out there straight away, Daniel. If you're drafting DeAndre Jordan in a fantasy league, you're not winning free throws. You can't win free throws. It is impossible to win free throws. It is impossible to compete in free throws. So do not ever go into a draft thinking that I'm going to draft DeAndre Jordan and I'm going to make up for the free throws with other guys, because it can't be done. It literally cannot be done unless you have an ability to clone James Harden and have him four times on your team. If you do that, then you'll be average in free throws. Otherwise, it can't be done. So if you're drafting Jordan, you're already locked into that mode. But that means that he is elite. He is the top 1% of guys, like value standard score over 2 in rebounding, blocks, and field goal percentage. And no other players in the league give you such massive, massive advantages at three categories. That's why he's so high. So I think that if you're in a head-to-head league and you're drafting at pick 24, and you get him there, it's significant value. It's a good 2 rounds, or 1.5 rounds of extra value on what you get on DeAndre Jordan. The other side of things, though, Daniel, is a guy that we think is going to be overrated. Who's your guy there? Because mine is going to be the same player, DeAndre Jordan.
I was going to actually go with DeAndre Jordan as well. Just for the same thing that you were talking about, the free throws. I own DeAndre Jordan in a dynasty league, and I also have Rudy Gobert, and I had to make a decision whether I wanted to trade Jordan or trade Gobert, and I decided to keep both of them. But, you know, I know going into next season that I'm going to lose free throws every week in that head-to-head league. But you can't ignore his double-digit points and rebounds and his massive block potential. You know, some players, though, you know, they may not realize how big of an impact he's going to make on their roto team, and they're going to take him as a top 100 player, and that's too high. He's almost undraftable.
No, he is undraftable. You can't own him. I'm just finished doing my top 150 roto guys and didn't put him on the list at all, because it doesn't matter what you've done. You could go, you know what, DeAndre Jordan's sitting available in the last round, I'm going to take him. But everything you've done up until that point is just destroyed by adding him. Your free throws, you might be sitting as the best free throw percentage out of the whole league. You add him, you go from first to last straight away. And if you get a 1 in a category in a roto league, you can't win. You might finish. I ask this question a lot, and look, some people will say, yeah, they've seen someone win with Howard or Jordan or Drummond on their team. But a lot of the times you'll say, yeah, I had these guys on my team and I finished third. And that's about as far as you can get to me. It's almost impossible to win a roto league. And the challenges in doing it, it's not worth the effort. Just don't draft these guys. There's 4 guys this year who I consider undraftable in roto. And that's Jordan, Drummond, Howard, and Mason Plumlee. I think with the extra role, he's going to be impossible to own as well in Portland. But so I've got Jordan as well as an overrated guy, because if you're in a roto league or if you're not punting free throws at the average draft position of 24, it's insanity. You can't do it. You've lost that category. And if you draft James Harden and then pair you up with DeAndre Jordan, well, your draft is finished. You've just ruined what you do. So please, the one thing, if you take away anything from anything that I do in any podcast or any articles, do not try to make up DeAndre Jordan's free throw percentage. It can't be done. And that's my public service announcement.
If you're taking Jordan in a head-to-head league, it's going to indicate to the other teams that you're punting free throw percentage. Yep. So you really, you know, you need to let him slide. He can't be a first-round pick for you. He could return first-round value, but you need to take him later on in the draft so that you can at least get a couple players to kind of hide that strategy of saying, okay, I'm not caring about free throw percentage, because otherwise other owners are going to be able to key in on that, and you might, you know, not be able to get guys that can be really great for your strategy. So he's got a lot of risk for your overall team success.
What I think you need to do in that sort of situation is what happened in the Red Rock Listener League that I'm in, the Stacey Augman division. Tom had the pick at pick 12, so he picked at pick 13 as well, and he went Drummond and Jordan and just bang, locked it in. He's got the two biggest guys in those in that punt free throw build. So anybody else who's deciding they're going to punt free throws, they've lost the two biggest guys out of that category. So he's got them locked in. If he had have been picking at, say, pick 10 and pick Jordan, then someone at pick 12 could have gone with Drummond and split the value, and it wouldn't have worked as well. But getting Drummond and Jordan back to back, it means that nobody, pretty much nobody's going to be able to compete in rebounds, not going to be able to compete in field goal percentage, and they're going to find it tough in blocks. So he's almost locking up three categories there, and it's going to steer everyone else away from the value of those categories too. So that's probably the best way to do it. If you're picking it at pick 12 or pick 14 in a 14-team league and going to go back-to-back with those guys, because you're not going to be picking for another 20-odd picks, you grab both those guys, you lock yourself into that strategy, but other people don't get a chance to sort of break it down. So that's another way that you can go around it. I mentioned another guy before that was an overrated player, Stevenson. I just mentioned again, at pick 140, you don't want anything to do with it. Daniel, let's talk about guys who if you're still there, I think Daniel's just dropped out for a second. Are you there? No, there you are, he's back.
Yep.
Daniel, we're going to talk about guys who are looking for a perfect situation. So guys who are limited only by their playing time, and if they were given a bigger role, they'd become much better players, be able to put up fantasy-relevant stats. Who's a player on this team that you go, look, I'll be targeting this guy if he got 30 minutes a game?
We mentioned his name a couple times, Wesley Johnson. You know, if Paul Pierce is going to miss time with a back injury or, you know, some other injury puts him into a role where he's getting more minutes. Wesley Johnson could be a really underrated guy. Someone is like Danny Green, who was very underrated for a long time in fantasy because he's able to provide blocks and three-pointers. Now, Wesley Johnson could provide those that unique combination of statistics as well.
It's the guy. Look, Wes Johnson, he's not going to score a lot, but those defensive numbers and the three-pointers is definitely something that is that's interesting that we need to pay attention to if he gets into that role. The guy that I like is a guy that we mentioned earlier on, and that's Cole Aldrich. If something happens to DeAndre Jordan, he slides in there, he'd get 30 minutes a night, and he becomes a significant contributor, and he'd be a must-own in every sort of fantasy format because Doc's going to have no real choice but to give him 30 minutes because, again, Big Baby Davis is having these ankle problems now. He's also got the problem of being not good. So Aldrich will get those minutes ahead of him and he'll become fantasy relevant if anything happened to DeAndre Jordan. So he's someone that you definitely want to keep an eye on and just see anything that happens. And then you'd want to smash him in daily fantasy if he got that opportunity to be a starter because he would be able to put up some big numbers.
I also wrote down Josh Smith's name in the situation that Blake Griffin misses time. We saw how much of an impact Josh Smith was able to get playing alongside Dwight Howard in the playoffs against the Clippers. He had that one game where he and Dwight Howard combined for six alley-oops and were just destroying the interior defense. And in that kind of a role, playing against such a dominant interior guy that has that great vertical game in DeAndre Jordan, Josh Smith could have some really great games, and that stretch might help you win a couple weeks in a head-to-head league. That being said, once Blake Griffin came back, you would want to either drop Josh Smith or just, bench him almost every day.
Pretty much.
But if in the situation where Blake Griffin is going to miss games again, you're going to see an increase in value in players like JJ Redick, but a really big boost to Josh Smith.
Yeah, look, we saw that in Houston when he was getting minutes. He actually improved his percentages, but he was providing some great numbers, some good blocks. He's always been a guy that gets rebounds, out of position assists, steals, and blocks. And his scoring has dipped, but he gives those other four categories in pretty high amounts. So he is someone to watch for if the situation arrives. You know what? We've talked Clippers. We haven't mentioned Chris Paul, really, and we haven't really mentioned Blake Griffin. Let's talk Chris Paul. The 82 games, I've said that before, it's not something that we're used to seeing, and he was always downgraded for being a guy who's going to miss time. We don't know what to expect from him. It's pretty foolish to try and project which guys are going to be injured, which guys are going to miss time, but Paul's history suggests that another 82-game season is probably not all that likely, but in saying that, he is still an elite fantasy prospect, and you know what? You're going to be able to get him slide down fairly low in drafts, low to his ability. He's got an ADP of 8, and to me, that's probably a little bit low. I'd be happy taking him at pick 5. Do you see any signs in Chris Paul's game of him slowing down at all this season as he gets older, or everything is just all systems go?
I think Chris Paul is going to be one of the leaders in the league in steals again. He's going to get you double-digit assists. Even last season, he was starting to take three-pointers more than he had in previous years. Chris Paul is he's a top 10 player. I think, you know, he's Steph Curry probably, I think he overtook him as the number one point guard in fantasy basketball.
Yep.
You might be able to make an argument for Russell Westbrook providing a little bit more value as well, just for the monster scoring, numbers that he's going to put up. But if you leave the first round and Chris Paul is your pick, I think you're going to be happy with the way that your team turns out.
Especially because you're probably going to be able to get him at the back half of the first round. And that's going to be fantastic because you're going to get double-digit assists. You're going to get probably two steals a night. And one of the key things that's underrated with Chris Paul is you're going to get – he's a point guard and he's not going to hurt your field goal percentage. He's actually going to help your field goal percentage. He's going to shoot over 85% from the free throw line. And if for some reason your league's counting turnovers, which I highly recommend against, but I know a lot of people do love turnovers – he's a point guard who doesn't get you any turnovers, and his assist to turnover ratio is out of control. It is so much better than everybody else. And if that's a category in your league, Chris Paul, he goes close to being the number one player. That's how good his assist to turnover ratio is. So he provides a lot of value. He's also a guy that he's not a low point scorer, but you're not expecting big scoring from him. So going with him in the first round, a punt points sort of model is not a bad way to go. If that's the way that you're looking at the rest of the draft and you go, I want to get to these other guys, but they don't score enough points. The other players that were available in the first round, they're all scoring too many points and it's a waste not to use that. Like, you know, Harden, Davis, Curry, Westbrook, Durant, Cousins, James, they're all guys at 20 to 25 points plus, whereas Chris Paul probably won't score 20 points. So you're not, if you're picking him and then you're deciding to punt points, you're not wasting one of his major talents. So that's another option you can go if you do happen to draft Chris Paul. But I think that he is going to be, again, he's going to be a fantastic option after having another solid season last season. Look, he averaged only 2.3 turnovers a game, which is incredible. Considering Westbrook was at about 4 a game, we're talking, it's almost double. Considering how much he handles the ball and the assist numbers, it's just crazy. But Daniel, what about Blake Griffin? The Blake Griffin we saw in the playoffs was unlike any Blake Griffin we've ever seen before. What do you make of his evolution as a player in terms of, because his game has changed tremendously since his rookie season. I was talking with Sam Macy from the Fantasy Fix and we're talking about Blake Griffin and his rebounding numbers, which dropped from 12 a game in his rookie season down to 7.6 this year. That's a big drop off from a guy whose game has changed dramatically. His assist numbers have gone up almost the same amount as his rebounds have gone down. He can hit outside shots now. He's improved his free throw percentage. He's a completely different player from what we saw in his rookie season. Is he approaching true superstar status? Is he already there? How much further do you see his game progressing?
I think last season is Blake Griffin's, you're 1 foot away from his ceiling. I think he might be able to improve his rebounding a little bit more. But what you saw last season was Blake Griffin playing 18 feet away from the rim. He'd either be catching the ball on the high post and just blowing past his defender to get to the rim, or he was working with Chris Paul in the pick and roll. You also saw a lot of point forward with yep. Blake Griffin, where he was initiating, he was the pick and roll ball handler. And that helped boost his assists way up. But, you know, Blake Griffin, you know, maybe he starts taking some of those mid-range jumpers that he was able to convert at a good percentage last season and takes a step back and starts knocking down some three-pointers. And then you would see his value begin to rise. I think physically, he's able to do anything he wants on the court. I think it's just a matter of him putting in the work in the offseason and having that translate. So I don't think that he will be able to add three-pointers this season, but he's surprised us before, and he could surprise us again. I think if you want to take him in the second round of your drafts, you know, banking on him being healthy and him improving his game another level as he has in previous seasons, I think that could be a guy that could end up being, you know, like a top 15 talent. And I think he's – or is he getting drafted now?
His ADP is sitting at 18.
Oh, well, that's not too far of a boost, I guess, then. But I mean, he's a superstar player in the league.
Let's have a look at what he did in the playoffs last season, because the numbers are pretty crazy. In the playoffs last year, he averaged 25.5 points, 12.7 rebounds, so that's up from 7.6 in the regular season. He averaged over 6 assists a game. He got a steal a game and he had a block a game. He shot 51% from the field and he shot 72% from the free throw line. Now, those, if he had those sort of numbers, that's a top 10 player. I don't think that that's going to be possible because he played 40 minutes a night in the playoffs and he's not going to play 40 minutes a night during the regular season. But he's not also not going to play 30 minutes a night. He's going to be around 35 to 36 more than likely. But if for some reason that guy that we saw in the playoffs, that Blake Griffin that we saw in the playoffs, is the sort of the same guy that we see in the regular season, he could easily be a top 10 guy. Now, there's not many guys that you're going to pick at pick 20 or pick 18 that can jump into the top 10. As dumb as that sounds, the top 10 is generally pretty set. But if Griffin puts in those numbers, he goes from 20 to 10 pretty comfortably. So there is upside in picking him towards the middle to end of the second round. And as I said before, if we've seen someone do it, we know that they have that ability to do it. Now, whether he can or not and whether he can do it for prolonged stretches remains to be seen. But before the Clippers got eliminated, he'd been the best player throughout the playoffs. I think that's fair to say. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, I was thinking right now, Anthony Davis is one of the top three players in fantasy. You know, yep. And we're thinking if Anthony Davis is able to start knocking down three pointers, he's going to be the number one player every year. Well, Blake Griffin, if he starts making three pointers, he doesn't have the same defense statistics as Davis does, but he's going to be, he's going to be one of the top power forwards in the league then, you know, behind Davis. Because he's going to give you a ton of assists at that position, three pointers, rebounds, a high percentage from the floor, and a good free throw percentage as well for a power forward. Just an incredible value.
And he does have that. He's got that upside. He's been in the league a while, but he hasn't been in the league that long. And there is still room for him. We've seen it. He's improved every single season. And that's a great sign of a star player. Someone who just continually gets better and better. And he's just doing new things. He's like, he averaged 6 assists a game in the playoffs. That's crazy. Plus almost 13 rebounds. He was basically a 26 and 13 guy with 6 assists. And that sort of numbers is just, nobody does that in the league. There's nobody who provides that sort of value. So he's got tremendous, tremendous upside. I don't think there's really many other guys that we need to talk about from this team. Now, you know what? When we talked about draft picks before, I did neglect to mention Brandon Dawson, who was the second round draft choice that they bought off the Pelicans this season, who showed a little bit in summer league. But again, he was pick 56 in the draft. What are we going to expect from him, if anything, ever? I don't really see him developing into any sort of NBA talent on this team, at least.
Yeah, he might get 200 minutes a season in garbage time. Yeah, but his role is extremely dependent on other players getting injured.
He looked okay though in summer league. He looked pretty aggressive crashing the boards, and that's something that we can sort of look at and think that he might get traded. He might be part of a package with Crawford and go somewhere else and then get moved on wherever and get a 20-minute a night role. Then he becomes useful because he showed that he was better than pick 56 in the draft. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. So to me, there's more value probably in Dawson than what there is in CJ Wilcox from a fantasy point of view, even though they'll pick 30 picks apart in the draft. I think that Dawson showed more NBA talent so far than what we've seen, even though it has only been summer league. That Wilcox wasn't able to do anything in summer league really last year anyway. So it's not like he starred in that sort of arena. Interesting to see what Dawson does if he even gets on the court.
Yeah, if a player like if Cole Aldridge is banged up, just for a couple, not able to play as many minutes that night, or if Chuck Hayes isn't able to go, he might be able to get a couple minutes and he could have a couple rebounds, a big putback dunk. But not a lot of production.
No, there's not going to be anything from Brandon Dawson. He's just a name that's worth mentioning. And I will be tracking to see how he goes, because I think there's a little bit of a spark in him. All right, Daniel, let's talk about the last couple of bits that we do in all these shows. We're talking about favorite players. So on the current team, who's your favorite player?
On this current team, my favorite player to watch is Blake Griffin. Just for the entertainment value. I know he's not dunking as much as he used to. And he wrote, saying that he does that to help preserve his body from playing inside. But he's just such an exciting player to watch. When he gets the ball in transition in the open court, you just know something amazing is about to happen. And then last year, watching him be the ball handler in pick and roll situations was just incredible to see someone at his size, you know, 6'10", 250 pounds, dribbling the ball between his legs, you know, and rocketing to the rim, or pulling up for mid-range shots was just, it was beautiful to watch him play last season.
It was, he's definitely fun to watch. There's no doubt that he is fun to watch. And that the ball hand, and watching him like in transition and on a fast break, you're running it down with Chris Paul, even if he's the guy with the ball, it's fantastic. We saw so many examples of him doing that with, you know, behind the back passes to Paul and then following up with an alley-oop and things that just are super entertaining, and they make all the highlight reels. But he's quite fundamentally good as well. He's very sound. His dribbling ability is fantastic for a guy of his height and his size and the position that he plays. There's a lot to like about Blake Griffin. I'm going to go with Chris Paul though as my favorite guy. I love watching guys with vision and guys being able to set things up, and that's basically what Chris Paul does. Sure, he can be a bit of a prick out on the court, and people don't, you know, really like his personality at times, but I've got no problem with that. He's a super competitor. He's great on defense. He's, you know, he hits clutch shots. We saw that against the Spurs with that great game winner to get them through the first round. But I just love watching his court vision and him setting things up, and everything that he can do out on the court. And from a fantasy point of view, he's been just extremely consistent. He's been, for the last 8 years, he's been a top 10 player. The lowest he's been ranked in eight category leagues is 23rd throughout his career. So he came in as a rookie and was a top 20 player, and that literally doesn't happen. The only guy that I can think of that's been ranked higher than him in about the last 8 years is Anthony Davis as a rookie, who I think ranked 21st, whereas Paul came in at 23. But nobody else really comes in at that sort of area at all. He's just been remarkably consistent with his fantasy value throughout his career. And look, he's been playing 10 years, but he's probably got, you know, a few more good ones left in him. The more interesting question, Daniel, is all time. Who's your favorite player all time on this team?
He was only there for 2.5 seasons. You know, the Clippers haven't had that successful of a history, at least in my lifetime. But my favorite all-time Clipper was Baron Davis. Yep. He didn't have a lot of great games with the Clippers. You know, it's more, you look back and those probably aren't the best games of Baron Davis' career. But I really loved watching Baron Davis play. He's just such a physical point guard and was able to just be so explosive. And really wish things would have worked out better. You know, it wasn't really something that was in Baron Davis' control as a player for his success with the Clippers, but one of my all-time favorite players in the NBA, and you know, was there for the Clippers for those 2.5 seasons, and then before being traded to Cleveland for that first round pick that became Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I think that's what his tenure in Los Angeles is going to be remembered the most for, as being the guy who was traded for the pick that became Kyrie Irving. But you're right, his time there, look, he averaged 7.5 and 8 assists in the 2 seasons he was in Los Angeles, scored pretty well. He was pretty rock solid for his time that he was there. Not as good as his time in Golden State, but he was still pretty good. Now, you mentioned before about the Clippers during your lifetime not being that successful. I was looking up and working at, you know, who's going to qualify as my favorite player from this team all time. And I got a question for you, question without notice. Who is the player who has played the longest tenure for this team in their history? Who's played the most seasons? And if you get this right, I'm going to be shocked.
In my lifetime?
No, ever. Who's played the most ever for this
ever?
Team? Yep.
I think right now the longest current one is John or Jordan, but I don't know historically.
Historically, it is Eric Pietkowski, and he's played 9 seasons. Nobody has played 10 seasons for this team. And I found that incredible. I couldn't believe that nobody had played more than 9 seasons for this team. Everyone plays 2 seasons, 3 seasons. Yeah, Chris Paul's played 4, Griffin's played 6, and Griffin will probably be a 10-year player, but nobody has been. Not one person has played 10 seasons for this club. And to me, that
wow.
is as big an indictment on their past as anything, that nobody has been good enough or nobody has stuck around for 10 years. And the guy who's had the longest tenure at this team is Eric Piatkowski, which nobody would have really heard of. Like, some people would have, but the amount of people that I could have asked that question to and they would have got it right would be very, I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. That goes back to my favorite player, and I was trying to go, who's, okay, yep. Look, it's probably Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, to be honest, throughout history. They're the two most exciting guys for the Clippers that have been there, you know, for the time I've been watching basketball. But a guy that's always stuck in my head as a Clipper, now I don't know if this is probably before your time a little bit as well, Daniel, it's Loy Vaught, who played for the Clippers back in the early 90s. He had some pretty decent seasons, some seasons where he averaged a 16 and 10, a 15 and 10, a 17, a 18 and 10 throughout the mid-1990s. He was a real solid scorer, rebounder. But it just goes to show how bad the history of this team is when the player that I have to rely upon, a guy that I actually liked watching back in the day, was Loy Vaught. And, yeah, Loy Vaught not ever going into the Hall of Fame anytime soon. So that's more an indictment on the Clippers than it is anything to say with Loy Vaught. Okay, Daniel, I think we're done. Anything you want to add about the Clippers here?
No, just if Blake Griffin has watched this, please unblock me on Twitter.
Why would he block you on Twitter? What have you done to him?
I don't know. I wrote an article saying that he should dunk more, and I think he blocked me because of that. But I think he's being sensitive little baby. I don't know.
Blake,
I'm a big Blake Griffin fan.
Come on,
if you're
Blake.
Watching this, Blake, unblock me.
Come on, Blake, unblock. Hey, while you're unblocking, might as well give us both a follow as well, Blake. So just
right.
Don't be so sensitive. We've talked you up nonstop throughout this podcast, Blake. So you are probably sitting at home watching. You've got YouTube on. Just chime in with a question now, Blake. But please, just unblock Daniel. That's all we ask at this point. And if you want to throw a follow away, we'd be happy to accept that as well. That's fantastic. I don't think I've been blocked by any NBA players that I'm aware of. I might have been.
He's the only one I know so far.
Okay. I don't recall. I don't think anyone's blocked me, but that really made me laugh. That was really interesting. All right.
I didn't even add him. I don't understand.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's such a good story. It's so funny to see NBA players get like they just block people and just get petty for little reasons. It's very humorous, and it just shows that these guys are human and they do get affected by things, and whether they see it as slights on them or the game or unjustified criticisms, and it, no matter how many millions of dollars they're making, no matter how many commercials they're in, a little thing still gets to them, and it's not humbling. Humbling's not the right word. It sort of humanizes them a bit when they think that
makes them more personal.
Yeah, like they're not immune to criticism, and you can go out there and, you know, Lance Stephenson could be watching this, and I've just trashed him for half an hour, and I apologize, Lance, if you're watching, but you know, these guys aren't immune to criticism. They hear it and it affects them. No matter how many times they get told a million times, you're the best. If one person says you're shit, they probably listen to that and go, you know what? Why did that guy say that? I'm going to get angry, whatever. And they use it as motivation. It's a very interesting dynamic, and it definitely does make them more relatable, I think. Daniel, let's go again. Where can everyone find you on Twitter?
At Minuteman Dan.
So follow Daniel at Minuteman Dan. Don't block him, but go and follow him over there on Twitter, and keep an eye out on Hardwood Paroxysm for his articles that come out, and for any articles that come out on Hardwood Paroxysm. And make sure you're checking out Basketball Monster. And if you aren't a member and you're thinking of becoming a member, the memberships will open. Looking at this stage, the memberships for Basketball Monster will open this Wednesday, so make sure you go ahead and check out there and chime in on the forums there. I'll be answering questions all over the place there. We've got a stack of team preview podcasts coming this week. We're going to have the Pelicans tomorrow. We're going to have the Lakers after that, and then we have the Rockets, we have the Suns, the Jazz, the Nuggets, and the Spurs all coming this week. So a lot more preview podcasts coming this week. Daniel, thank you for coming on. It's been great having you on to talk some Clippers.
Yeah, thanks. Hope you had a good Father's Day.
Oh, thank you very much. I did. It was a nice Father's Day over here. Nice relaxing day, and that's all you can pretty much ask for. Okay, that's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.